Well, today I want to speak about a subject that we actually talk about really quite often and pretty openly. We speak about it openly. We've even talked about it today already. Yet it's an exceedingly personal and in many ways private topic. But we speak about it openly, and it's a very important subject as well. It's referenced in the Bible specifically by the actual word used nearly 500 times. And again, it's an important topic because it's mentioned so many times. That's one of the signs we can know that it's important, but it's, again, really personal and really private, but very important. It's also referenced many additional times with synonyms, other words that reference the topic without saying the actual word. This subject and topic is so common, we might not actually give it the level and seriousness of thought and attention that it deserves. The topic is prayer. And, you know, we come off of the, come out of the fall holy days, and we're into a long, quite a long period until the next holy days. And prayer is a really beneficial topic, I believe, to talk about. It's an element of our Christian lives that's very important because it's how we communicate with God. It's a significant component, actually, of our relationship with God, the Father, and Jesus Christ. We all know that, and yet sometimes we talk about it so openly, we might not think about it as seriously as we should. And God, of course, speaks to us through His Word and His Spirit. So prayer is one way, one part of that communication process, and honestly, I think God can speak to us while we're praying as well. So I'd like to tell you a story of my first real prayer, and that, again, is pretty private. But I was, and when I was 13 to 14, in that year period, I had two serious leg injuries. One was a sports injury that I got in the PE class, that I have a scar that is pretty nasty still on my leg, and I couldn't really walk for several weeks. And I spent quite a bit of time by myself. You know, my family was working. We had restaurants. And I was, you know, I was of, in my family anyway, of working age in restaurants by that point. So they were down a person. So there was no one around. So I read a lot. And some of those times were in the summer. I read a lot and watched TV. And I spent a lot of time by myself. I thought a lot of things that, you know, 13-year-olds, I wondered about the meaning of life, and I thought about a lot of things. Almost as soon as I recovered from that injury, I had a really nasty break of my ankle into the joint, and by this time we had moved back up into the mountains, and I was at home for a few weeks. I would have homework brought to me, and I would do it, and oftentimes, you know, we lived so far back in the '60s, sometimes the TV worked and sometimes it didn't. Because we, I don't know if I've told you the story, the way we would get television when we lived back in, you know, the county where my family's been for about 160 years. But we would actually run a wire from the TV up the hill, all the way to the top of the hill, to the top of the tallest tree behind the house. And it was quite high. There would be a booster up there and a booster down at the TV. And so if it was working just right, you'd get a TV station. The bad news is they were from Tennessee, so you couldn't get the Kentucky games. I know a lot about Dolly Parton, so because that's in that same neck of the woods but in the Tennessee side. And often, not often, but occasionally, if you forgot to unplug the TV and there was a thunderstorm, that booster, if it was, because it was the top of the tallest tree, would get struck by lightning and not only blow up the booster, but also the television. But occasionally it worked. And that's about the time I really got my bug to travel as well. When it was working, I saw a program on what we called educational TV at the time. I think we call it, what do we call it now? Public TV. But we called it educational TV. Was one of two or three stations we got, and it was about Singapore. And I was like, I want to go there. Now, I've been to a lot of places, but not Singapore. But during that time, I spent most of the time when that TV didn't work, and I would do my homework, and I would think, and honestly, that was the first time I had a real prayer. And I think that is, now I didn't start really having a normal prayer life, a regular prayer life, until I went to college. And I was at Ambassador College in Big Sandy. I was 18, and it was more conducive to having a normal prayer life. And the dorms would have, if any of you have been there, you might remember the dorms. They'd have the lobby, and then there was a hallway that was almost like a horseshoe or a U, and it would have one room of that four people would sleep in. Then there would be a study for eight people, another bedroom for four, and then it had the same thing on the back wall and on the other side wall. And in between those bedrooms and the studies would be a prayer closet. And so there were 6 prayer closets for about 24 people. And it was more conducive. And if you were in the prayer closet, you could turn the light on, and a little light would come on outside the prayer closet to let people know they were in there, someone was occupied. So it made it more conducive to having a regular prayer life. I have to tell you the story, though. I won't tell you the person's name. I don't think many of you, if any of you, know him. But we had one person, I was a freshman, wide-eyed, country come to town kind of look. And somebody had, one of these guys climbed up above the prayer closets one morning and would lean over and talk into the light fixture above the prayer closet. And he goes, "I hear you." That was his last semester. I think he was asked to leave, but it was really funny. I still think it was funny, but the point is, it made it more conducive. And of course, there's a lesson there. A place to pray is really important. Now, later, when I went to Ambassador College in Pasadena for my junior and senior year, I won't forget the time that Mr. Richard Ames publicly embarrassed me in front of, 100 people, because we would start each one of his classes anyway with prayer. And he corrected me in how I prayed. Let's just say I don't pray the way he corrected me for now. But I do remember that pretty clearly. And that, of course, is a public prayer. Now, I've heard some friends say that they feel like their prayers aren't going beyond the ceiling. Maybe we have felt that way too. But why is prayer important? Why is prayer important? How can we more effectively use this magnificent opportunity we have in our relationship with God? You know, two of the most helpful scriptures about prayer are written by Paul. Let's turn to Philippians 4. We'll just start with a couple of scriptures here. Philippians 4, verse 6, we're admonished not to be anxious or insecure. And I think insecurity comes from not trusting God, but not to be anxious or insecure, but rather to use prayer to make our request known. Now, I believe that this implies that faith is a part of the reason to pray, but it's also a result of prayer. Interesting if you think about it. And the same thing about reading the Bible. How does faith come? By reading the Bible. It's a big part of it. And I think prayer is the same way. Philippians 4, verse 6, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. Don't be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. That's a key word too. Let your request be made known to God. Make prayer a regular part of our lives. Now, the next verse in Colossians 4, just over a book or so, Colossians 4, we see that as with the verse in Philippians, thanksgiving is a critical element here too. Colossians 4, verse 2, it says, continue steadfastly in prayer, being watchful in it with thanksgiving. So steadfastly, regularly. Prayer should be a regular part of our lives. And if young people are thinking that this doesn't apply to them, I think it does. I told my personal story because I was 13 and 14 years old at the time. Now, again, it wasn't a regular part of my life at that point, But as we grow, it should be something that it says here, continue steadfastly in prayer and be watchful in it with thanksgiving. Watchful, considering the times, as Mr. Levy talked about, the times we live in and our personal journey. To be watchful in our personal journey. You know, there are dozens of related scriptures. I actually printed off more than 5 pages, single-spaced, of verses that apply to this. So I won't read a lot of them, but I will read a couple of more here. Let's go to Psalm 34, verse 15. Psalm 34, verse 15. And as we build a relationship with God, our prayer should grow too. So it's a lesson, really, for all of us, no matter the age. Our prayer should grow as we grow. It makes sense, right? And we see in Psalm 34 that God will hear us. Psalm 34, verse 15. The eyes of the Eternal are on the righteous, and his ears are attentive to their cry. If we have a right relationship with God and are earnestly seeking to follow and honor him with our lives, we never have to wonder if he's listening to our prayers. On the contrary, this verse assures us that he's carefully attuned to our lives and eager to hear every prayer that comes from our lips. The key point here is that God hears the prayers of those who put their trust in him. Now, as we go through today, we'll see that too. One more verse here as an intro. 1 John 5, verse 14. A lesson here is that our will and our requests have to align with God's will. 1 John 5, verse 14. 1 John 5, verse 14. This is the confidence we have in approaching God, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. Again, the key point here is that God answers every prayer that aligns with his will, and we want our will to align with his. This is the confidence we have in approaching God, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. He will hear us. That is a promise, and one that we can focus on. Now, for the most part of today, and I've been admonished by that same 15-year-old not to talk too long, today I'd like to focus on two brief prayers by a man of God we hear a lot about. You think, well, who writes a lot about prayer? Well, you might think it's the Apostle Paul. It's not him, although we'll turn to one or two of his scriptures that he wrote. But two brief prayers by a man of God we hear a lot about, but we don't necessarily hear much about his prayers. We think of him in a different context. And we know, I mean, you'll see, it's like, oh yeah, that's right, he wrote that. But he was actually quite good at praying. And he was really insightful, and there's some lessons we can learn there. He was born about 3,500 years ago, by what we can tell from the records. His life was split into three equal 40-year portions. Three equal 40-year portions, and you probably know that. Now, when he died, he was actually still in quite good health. His life was cut short. And, of course, the first 40 years were his life in Egypt. His life in exile was the second 40. And then his third 40-year period was his government of Israel. It was Moses. Moses. Two brief prayers of Moses. Now, we know his story, right? We know Moses' story, but we probably think in these images of, if you've ever seen the Ten Commandments, or we even read the scriptures about him, we think of him coming down the mountain with the tablets and being so angry that the people of Israel had crafted this golden calf. Or we think of him holding his arms up when the Red Sea is parting. His story, though, started obviously much before that. His life was threatened when he was a child by an edict of Pharaoh to kill all male children. Then he was adopted by Pharaoh's daughter. And then later he made a decision to make his life and throw in his lot, really, with the Israelitish brethren. Then after, he realized it wasn't quite time to do that. So he lived in exile in Midian, where he married the daughter of a Midianite priest. Zipporah was his wife's name. His father-in-law's name was Jethro. So we know a lot about him. And then while he was there, he had the famous encounter with God and the direction from God and the story of the burning bush. We remember his story. And then his return to Egypt and his leadership of Israel out of Egypt toward the promised land. So we know about Moses, and we know all the stories that come with that. And he was a great leader. But he's also known, his reputation, if we think about his reputation, he was really known for his worship of God. His worship of God and his deep care and willingness to sacrifice for Israel, but probably his patriotism for the Israelite nation as well. If we think of the sacrifices he was willing to make, and we'll talk a little bit about that. There are wonderful stories about Moses, but again, we'll review two of his prayers today. Let's turn to Exodus 33. Exodus 33. Now, leading up to Exodus 33, the people of Israel had crafted that golden calf. We know the story. It's a really infamous story. They'd crafted that golden calf when Moses didn't return as quickly as they thought he would have or should have. Moses had selflessly interceded on behalf of the people. Remember that? Remember that God had said that he would actually consume the people and build a new nation from Moses. And I don't know, would we be tempted to do that? Instead, he said no. Like, you promised that you would protect these people. And he advocated on behalf of the nation of Israel. So really a patriotic figure for all of Israel. So at some point, God had said, I've had enough of these people. I'm going to send you into Canaan, but I'm not going to go with you. I'll protect you, and I'll send an angel, but I won't go with you. Now, if you think about that, essentially, he's saying that he would take his presence away from Israel. But he would protect them, but he wasn't actually going to go with them. And that was terrifying to all of Israel. Terrifying. So that's the lead up to this prayer. And we come to what is considered one of the more powerful and insightful prayers of the Bible. That's the background up to it. So again, Moses intercedes on the behalf of Israel. And we start in verse 12. Exodus 33. And look for the lessons in how he is praying. What does he do? How does he approach God? What are some of the things we can learn here? Exodus 33, verse 12. Then Moses said to the Lord. Now we know the background, because he says, "See, you say to me, 'Bring up this people,' but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. Yet you have said, 'I know you by name,' and you have also found grace in my sight. Now therefore, I pray, if I have found grace in your sight, show me now your way, that I may know you, and that I may find grace in your sight, and consider that this nation is your people.' And he said," this is God, "'My presence will go with you, and I will give you rest.' Then he said to him, 'If your presence does not go with us,'" this is again that Moses is reminding him, God, of what he would say, verse 15, "Then he said to him, 'If your presence does not go with us, do not bring us up from here.'" If you're not going to go with us, just we don't want to go either. I'm speaking on behalf of Israel. Verse 16, "For how then will it be known that your people and I have found grace in your sight, except you go with us? So we shall be separate, your people and I, from all the people who are upon the face of the earth." Verse 17, "So the Lord said to Moses, 'I will also do this thing that you have spoken, for you have found grace in my sight, and I know you by name.'" So again, this is a powerful prayer. Moses again convinces God to change his mind. That's pretty impressive. What are the four keys here? Number one, Moses asks for God's presence. That's a big lesson for us. Not having God with them was terrifying to the Israelites. And it would be to us too. In fact, this is what we want and need too. We should earnestly desire to always, that God always be with us. And if you've ever sinned and you think that God is not with you, it's a terrifying thought. It was terrifying to the Israelites too. But that's what God asked for. He asked that he be present with Israel. Be present with us. We know that our sin separates us from God. Having God with us and present with us is better and more important than anything else. It's better than any physical thing we can pray for, that God is always with us. Now, King David picked up this theme many years later in Psalm 27. Let's go to Psalm 27. Psalm 27, verse 8 and 9. Psalm 27, verse 8 and 9. So it's a lesson. It's a key point we can pray for, that God is always with us, that he won't leave us. Psalm 27, verses 8 and 9. David wrote this too. Hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice, have mercy also upon me and answer me. When you said, seek my face, my heart said to you, your face, Lord, I will seek. Do not hide your face from me. Do not turn your servant away in anger. You have been my help. Do not leave me nor forsake me, O God of my salvation. It's a powerful prayer. We should always want God's presence with us. What else did he do in that prayer? The second thing is that Moses prayed according to God's promises and the favor already granted in verse 12. He prayed according to God's promises and the favor that was already granted. It's a reminder to come boldly before God and ask for our needs. Now, when I say boldly, I don't mean in a disrespectful way. Of course I don't, by any means. But with respect and fear, reminding God of his promises. That's what Moses did. He set the example for us. Let's go to Hebrews 4, and we'll see this. This was a verse that was, you know, drilled into me when I was in college, and I remembered this, and it's something that we can always do. Hebrews 4, verse 16. Hebrews 4, verse 16. Let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Come boldly. Boldly, not disrespectfully, not accusingly, not in a disrespectful manner in any way, but to come boldly and to remind God of those prayers or of the promises he's made. So that's the second thing Moses did. What's the third thing? Moses' primary purpose was to know God. That's a really important point. His primary purpose was to know God. Let's go back and read that in verse 13. He said, now therefore I pray, if I have found grace in your sight, show me now your way that I may know you and that I may find grace in your sight. He wanted to know God, and we should too. That's part of maturing, to know him, then we can be more like him. And to be like him, we have to know him. It fits the other way too. This is perhaps one of the most important lessons in this short passage. And the Apostle Paul focused on this in his writings as well. Let's go there quickly. I'll turn to one verse here. Let's go to Colossians 1. Colossians 1, verses 9 to 10. There's another verse we can go to as well, but we won't. Ephesians 1, 15 to 22, if you want to put that in your notes. But Colossians 1, 9 to 10. In fact, Paul said this pretty often. Colossians 1, verses 9 to 10. For this reason, we also, since today we heard it, do not cease to pray for you and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that you may walk worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing him, being fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. To know God, to know his ways, to know what he is like. That was the primary purpose in Moses' prayer. It's a beautiful prayer. And the fourth thing here, knowing God results in favor in his sight. That's, he also asked for that in verse 17. God heard Moses' prayer and agreed to be present. He prayed, reminded him of the favor and the promises he made, and indicated he wanted to know him and was asking for his favor, and God granted that. The request to know God in order to be like him resulted in favor and the result that Moses sought, his presence, his protection, and his guidance. Well, it's a short prayer of Moses that includes magnificent lessons. Now, Moses also wrote another famous prayer, and many of you might know it. It's actually the oldest psalm in the book of Psalms. It's the first psalm in the book four, of the Psalms. And Psalm 90, if we can turn there, Psalm 90 was written about the time Moses returned to lead Israel out of Egypt. So he's probably 80 years old or close to it in that neighborhood. And if you want to, you know, some scholars, I was reading in Sansino, that one of the reasons everyone's very, very confident this is a psalm of Moses is it's very similar to wording in Deuteronomy 33. But in the psalm, Moses emphasizes the eternal nature of God. Again, more lessons here we can learn. And the fragile, temporary nature of man. He emphasizes man's sinful nature and shortcomings compared to our perfect God. And he stresses how short human life is and that God existed before time and will exist after time is no more. So all these things in this very short, and when we read it, it's a beautiful psalm, but it's also really somber. And related, Moses states that the brevity of life shows that we should use it to know and become like God. And there's a very famous phrase in here that you will see as we go there. Psalm 90 is also the subject of the hymn, O God, Our Help in Ages Past. That's in our hymnal. I don't know that we actually sing that. I was talking to Mr. Hargarten about that. But if you listen to it on YouTube, it's a beautiful old hymn written by Isaac Watts. And it's based on Psalm 90. It's a beautiful hymn. Let's read Psalm 90. We'll read it through and then come back and look at a couple of lessons. Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations, before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting. You are God. You turn man to destruction and say, Return, O children of men, for 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it is past, and like a watch in the night. You carry them away like a flood. They are like asleep. In the morning, they are like grass which grows up. In the morning, it flourishes and grows up. In the evening, it is cut down and withers. For we have been consumed by your anger, and by your wrath we are terrified. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your countenance. For all our days have passed away in your wrath. We finish our years like a sigh. The days of our lives are 70 years. And if by reason of strength they are 80 years. Yet their boast is only labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off and we fly away. Who knows the power of your anger? For as the fear of you, so is your wrath. So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Return, O Lord, how long? And have compassion on your servants. Oh, satisfy us early with your mercy, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Make us glad according to the days in which you have afflicted us. The years in which we have seen evil, let your work appear to your servants and your glory to their children. And let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us and establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. It's a beautiful psalm, a beautiful prayer, and many lessons in there that we can learn. If we go back to verse 1, it talks about that He's been our dwelling place in all generations. And really showing the consistency that God has. That he's always been the same. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. Throughout all generations. Consistency is highly underrated. Highly underrated. And in verse 2, it says, You had formed the earth, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. Before time, and after it ceases to exist, time doesn't affect God. He talks about God in a sense that we can't quite capture. Right? We can, I think we can almost wrap our, I've said this a couple of times, but we can almost wrap our mind around living into the future without end, but we can't quite get around having no beginning. But God is. From everlasting to everlasting. Time is not applying to him. It doesn't apply to God. In verse 3, it says, return, O children of men. It's like in Sansino says here, God the unchanging is a refuge of changing and erring man. So it's return, O children of men. He's always there, and it applies really to that earlier verse 2. For 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it is past. That's a phrase that was picked up in the New Testament as well. And like a watch in the night, again, time has no meaning to God. In verse 6, and in the morning it flourishes and grows up, in the evening it is cut down. Life is short and it fades quickly. And again, the Sansino commentary talks about that this reference probably means more in the Middle East, where if grass does come up, it literally is withered by the heat in little time. And then we see in verse 8, it says, you've set our iniquities before us. And we know that sin separates us from God and results in his wrath. That's what the same thing in Exodus 33, that the sin of the nation of Israel was separating them from God. And he was, I can't deal with that anymore. So it's the same here, and we see that obviously. We know that in clear terms from Isaiah 59. And in the next one, it says, our secret sins in the light of your countenance. God knows our secret sins. I remember several years ago when we lived here the first time, we lived in Plymouth, and our girls were quite young. And one Sabbath morning, Olivia was probably, she was probably 6 or 7, and Celia was, how much younger are you, Celia? She was 4 or 5. And they're standing in the kitchen, and the window is right out there, and there are neighbors and the beyond that. And Olivia was very clear to Celia. She said, he goes, well, you know, it's like God can see everything you're doing, Celia. He knows what you're thinking. It's like looking through that window. He knows exactly what you're doing all the time. Well, he knew what Olivia was doing too. But he can. He knows our secret sins. It's really between him and us, isn't it? And then in verse 10, it says, yet their boast is only labor and sorrow. You know, that's, it talks about, you know, the trouble that we have. And I think I didn't write this down, but there's a verse in Job that says, life is short and it's full of trouble. Life is short and it's full of trouble. But why is that? This also leads us here to verse 12. It says, so teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. The lesson here is make the most of life by submitting to and knowing God and his ways. Without that, life is fruitless. Life is fruitless. Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. And we don't have to turn there, but if you want to write it down, Ephesians 5, verses 15 to 16 is a really good reference for that. It says, be careful how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil. Ephesians 5, verses 15 to 16. And then back here in Psalm 90, the other verse here in verse 14, it says, oh, satisfy us early with your mercy. In other words, when we pray, we're asking for speed, because our life is short. And I think Moses can show us here that it's okay to ask for that. It may not be coming as quickly, and relief may not come as quickly as we want, but we can ask for, it says, satisfy us early with your mercy. And verse 15, the years in which we have seen evil. And what he's asking for here is, let happiness be proportionate to the wretchedness experienced. So let it come through at the same level. And then again, at the end in verse 17, is that establish the work of our hands for us, asking for favor and success in all efforts. But I think a point here as well is that we have to have works. And when I say that, I mean, you know, one of the ministers many years ago said, we should have efforts that God can bless in our lives, whether it's physical things or in our spiritual efforts to become more like him. So a really beautiful and powerful prayer, two powerful prayers by Moses, and the helpful hints in how to really begin our prayer life if you're young and how to improve it. So those are really two quick lessons. I have, or two quick prayers. I have 3 points I'd like to finish up with. 3 points of how to start or improve our prayer life. What are 3 points? The first point is to benchmark the examples of prayers provided to us in the Bible. Benchmark. What do I mean by that? In the corporate world, and many of you who've worked in the corporate world know this, that many companies like to benchmark themselves against other companies, especially within different departments, different types. If you're known to have a really good marketing department, another company may come and say, well, can we spend 2 or 3 days with you and learn how you're having such success and we can return the favor? One of my favorite quotes about that is somebody from a really large company said, well, if we're not careful, we're going to benchmark ourselves to mediocrity. I thought that was, it's true, but if you're not benchmarking, the point is not to benchmark against mediocrity. So the great prayers of the Bible, if we want to be better at something, there are so many great prayers. We've read 2 here today. I'd like to read a list of some others for you and give you the scriptures if you want to read them later. Here are 12 prayers that we can study and see how to be a better practitioner in prayer. The first one is the Lord's Prayer. Obviously, Matthew 6, verses 5 to 15. And Jesus taught this lesson in prayer to his disciples and for us as well. That's Matthew 6, verses 5 to 15. And the second one is, again, this Moses' prayer for Israel in the wilderness. We just read that. But if you look at it, it's a different prayer. I'm talking about Exodus 32, verses 9 to 14. We also read Exodus 33, 12 to 17. But this is Moses when he prayed on behalf of Israel. So it's another prayer to read from Moses. The third one is Abraham's prayer for Sodom. Remember that he was almost bargaining with God. If we find 10 righteous people, and the examples in those, what are the examples? That they were putting themselves, or putting others in before them and asking for God's mercy. The fourth one is David's prayer for pardon and confession of sin. That's in Psalm 51. I don't think I gave you the verse for Adam or Abraham's prayer for Sodom. That's Genesis 18, verses 16 to 33. The fifth one is David's prayer at the end of his life, 1 Chronicles 29, verses 9 to 20. The second one is Hezekiah's petitions for deliverance and healing, 2 Kings 19, and into chapter 20, verses 1 to 7. We read that a few weeks ago before the feast. Another one is David's psalm of surrender, that's Psalm 139. Where David struggles with God's knowledge of him, God's thorough knowledge of him, and marvels at the formation of himself, how he has actually come into existence. It's a beautiful psalm. Also, Daniel's confession on behalf of his people. Remember that prayer? That's in Daniel 9, verses 1 to 19. Nehemiah's prayer for success. Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 1 through chapter 2, verse 9. And Jesus' prayer of submission at Gethsemane. That's Luke 22, verses 39 to 46. Paul's prayers for the Ephesian believers. Paul's prayers for the Ephesian believers. That is Ephesians 1, verses 15 to 23, and chapter 3, verses 14 to 21. And then One is that I think one of the most beautiful prayers, we read it during the Passover service, that's Jesus Christ's prayer for his brethren, John 17. And he talks about knowing God in that as well. It's a beautiful verse. So that's the first point, is to benchmark the examples of prayers provided to us in the Bible. If we want to be have a more rich prayer life, we can benchmark people who are really good at praying. The second point might be a little controversial. It's not, shouldn't be too controversial. And the second point of how to improve our prayer lives is start each day with prayer. Now, I know a lot of people like to pray at night, but start each day with prayer, even if it's a little bit. And if you say most of your prayer at night, starting each day with prayer. Why do I say that? Well, I have, as my dad used to say, don't say it unless you have Bible for it. I have some Bible for it. Psalm 5, verse 3. Psalm 5, verse 3. Psalm 5, verse 3. It says, my voice you shall hear in the morning, O eternal. In the morning I will direct it to you and I will look up. I'll read that again. My voice you shall hear in the morning, O eternal. In the morning I will direct it to you, and I will look up. Instead of looking down, we can recall who is the great Creator God, and we can look up. The psalmist who penned this really shows us that a way to pray is to have that eager expectation of being able to pray to God every day. And we should believe that God will answer those prayers and diligently watch for his hand at work. The key point here is that when we pray, we can wait in eager anticipation for God to work on our behalf. But start each day with prayer. And then the third point is to make prayer a regular part of your day. Make prayer a regular part of our day. Let's go to Ephesians 6. Make it something we do every day. It can be difficult. We can feel sometimes that our prayer isn't going beyond the ceiling. But it's an important part to have in our lives because it's how we talk to God. Ephesians 6, verse 18. Ephesians 6, verse 18, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, being watchful to this end with all perseverance and supplication for all the saints. So it tells us again another example of what to pray about. It's to pray for others. We can pray that each other will have knowledge of God, that we'll be close to each other, and that we will grow and develop and truly yield to God. So again, more of a Christian living message about really how to improve our relationship with God. And whether we are longtime members or we are young people just beginning a relationship with God, prayer is an essential element in that relationship. It's an essential element, and it sometimes might seem like we hear so much about it that perhaps we take it for granted. It's a very personal thing. It's personal, it's private. We pray in public, obviously, but mainly we are admonished to pray in private, and having a spot you can do it, that will help. I know I think of Olivia in her dorm room. There's not really a ton of places to pray, but having a place and having a time that we normally do it is a good way to get the habit really going, and our prayer should continue to be growing as we grow. And again, a very personal, private matter, but we have to be comfortable with it in public as well. But we can improve our prayer life, and we really should. And we should begin every day with prayer and really make it an important part of our everyday lives.